You're listening to Red Nation Online.
Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 86. On today's podcast, we are joined by Canadian men's national team interim head coach Michael Finley. Welcome to From the Black Hole, episode 86, and it's very exciting to welcome back a gentleman who was on the program, I'm not sure exactly how long ago it was, 8 months ago maybe, something like that. Maybe it was a year. I don't really, no, sorry, go ahead.
I don't think it was a year, but I don't think it was a year, but it was a few months ago for sure.
Yeah, it was within the last year because I'm pretty sure then I managed to briefly say hi to you at the game in Vancouver, the Mexico game. It was a bit of a wave, and I bellered out your name for a second. We had a brief, hey, how's it going? Good luck.
That was about it.
But yeah. Anyway, I'm not sure if people will recognize your voice or not, but this is Michael Finley, the interim head coach of Canadian men's national team, and welcome back to the program. Very, very pleased to have you on.
Always a pleasure, and thanks for taking the time, and love to talk about football as it's a priority on a daily basis.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I mean, I should say to you, I appreciate you taking the time, especially because you just had a very busy media day today, and then I'm assuming that it's not very long until you're jumping a plane to Morocco for these upcoming friendlies.
Yeah, it was good, busy, but always, as I say, good busy because what we were talking about. But yeah, and then staff will depart tomorrow. We'll be heading to Morocco first thing tomorrow morning.
Right. Well, busy time. Okay. Well, let's get into it then.
You bet.
Now, I'd like to start by kind of looking back because, of course, you were on the bench throughout the whole last series of World Cup qualifiers, a series that, you know, ultimately ended not where I'm sure you guys had hoped it would end. Came up with kind of an eerily similar result to the last round of World Cup qualifying, where we were maybe a goal or two away from pushing onto the hex, but just couldn't get it done. Obviously this is something that you're going to bring with you to what's going on now. So I wonder if you have, you know, in your mind, some major reflections over what happened over qualification. What are the lessons learned? What were moments that stood out that were key moments that you think are important bringing forward, and maybe some performances? It sounds like you got something going on there.
Yeah, sorry about that. I don't know.
No, that's okay.
Speaking back at me. Okay, we're here.
Okay, sorry. Do you need me to repeat the question?
Yeah, just repeat that. I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that.
No, that's okay. I just want you to reflect a little bit on World Cup qualifying as it happened and what you observed being on the bench. You know, the things that you take away out of it, specific things that you take away out of it, some key moments that were instructive as to how things went, maybe some key performances or lack of key performances in particular areas, those kinds of things that kind of sum up World Cup qualifying for you in your position as assistant coach.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on first and foremost, it's as a program and as a staff, and quite frankly, as a nation, it's always disappointing when you do not meet that initial goal that you're looking for. And you know, first and foremost, it was disappointing. I mean, you can't mm-hmm. hide that. I think as we came through, I think we also can take some pleasure in the fact that, you know, behind the scenes and as a group and as a program and as a vision that started when Benito was fired, you know, we did make some specific strides in in, you know, building out the required knowledge and the required information to get a better idea and handle on what international football demands from our players. Mm-hmm. And the other area was the fact that in that period of time, we were able to expand our long list of players, basically doubled the list of players that we can now look to and say, okay, they participated either in a training camp or they actually played an official match. And that gives us a much better sense of what the future looks like, because part of that program and part of that strategy was to try and identify as many players as possible under the age of 23 that then would bridge us into that key area of 24 to 28, which is where the vast majority of players lie when you qualify for a World Cup, specifically mm-hmm. in CONCACAF, when you mm-hmm. look at the numbers. I think we also were able to develop a strong mentality behind the ball. There's lots of comments about being defensive. And I have to say, from being part of that staff and part of the learning process and part of the teaching process, that is an area that we really identified as an early weakness for us,
right.
in terms of the international way and being better organized and understanding, where and when, both as an individual and as a collective, how to perform. Key moments. I think at the end of the day, what you can look at as it relates to, the Canadian national team at this moment in time is, we lacked critical elements at critical times in critical areas. And that is why it's so important what, the Excel program and our pathway is trying to address, back in Rob Gale's area and in Paul Stalteri's area, where mm-hmm. they can identify those types of critical elements and start to apply them earlier. So as we see the graduating and the progressing player, they are going to be vastly more armed in those situations. We look at it and say that I think we had the necessary talent and to qualify, but football is funny. It's one bounce away from continuing, and it's one bounce away from not continuing. And at times, I think programs are in danger of trying to, as they say, throw the baby out with the bathwater. And I think we right. have to realize that there's a lot of things that the program and the staff and the support mechanism around it and the Office of Canada Soccer really provided for us to take some very significant steps forward. And you know what, Robbie, it's easy for me to say that now. And I know that, your audience may say, what's he talking about? We didn't qualify.
Right,
I get
right.
that.
Right.
But I think we also have to be realistic and say, what was our progression? How is our momentum? And can we continue to build on the things that we have already established?
Right.
And not be reactive to just, burning the house down. Football is a long-term commitment. And from my position, that's one of the things we need to do vastly better is we have to have a longer-term look at things. And I think what's happened over the last 3, 4, and 5 years even, we're going to start to see that fruit very soon. And, so that gives you sort of an overview.
Right, right.
Performances. I think there was a number of very impressive, team performances, and there was also a lot of good individual performances. Specifically about some of the players that we introduced that had not been in the program, had not been identified, had not selected to join Canada at this point, and so we're pleased with all of that as a collective.
Right, right. I mean, you've just provided me about a dozen follow-up questions, and now I have to try and remember them all, which is going to be...
That's my plan, is to just to sort of confuse you, definitely.
Well, that's a plan that easily comes to fruition, let me tell you.
yeah.
No, let's go to the players for a second, and then I'll maybe come back to some of these lessons learned, because I think there's a lot of meat there. But I definitely want to touch on the fact that, it was absolutely clear that there was a sea change going on around convincing a lot of these players that were dual nationals to come to the program. And some that had held off, some that had never been apart, some that had walked away maybe and maybe came back. And then there's a raft of potential under 17s and under 20s and whatnot that might be coming. And I know it's been reasonably well documented that a lot of the behind the scenes work and the program in general is partially responsible for that. I know Victor Montaliani was referencing the idea that it was a 3-star program and they're trying to make it a 5-star program and all that. Now, has that well of potential playing talent been mostly exhausted? Or do you figure that there's going to be a semi-regular turn-up of players that maybe weren't on the radar and now they're on the radar and now they're coming to play for Canada?
I think to your first point, I think you know, credit has to be given, you know, and it's easy for me to say this because he's the president and Peter Montopoli is general secretary, so I better, you know, better watch my P's and Q's, as they say. But
right.
I think there's credit that must be given to the established vision of Victor and Peter about how they were going to address this issue of these dual nationals. And we needed to change, and I think we talked about this in the last discussion we had,
mm-hmm.
That you know, there had to be a mindset. We had to change the mindset about the qualities we had, the planning that was in place, and also the potential that could be had, and those individuals could be part of that potential. And then it was the follow-up. It's like you know, any sales guy who's trying to sell something, you know, you've got to touch your client a number of times, a number of different ways before they ultimately make the decision. And I think there was a multi-leveled plan there that bore fruit because the players at the end of the day were excited about being involved, saw the quality that was involved with the program, saw the quality that was involved with the support from Canada Soccer itself. But more importantly, they saw the potential, you know,
mm-hmm.
and that doesn't matter who was at the helm per se. They just saw the potential of what they saw in the younger player coming through, what they saw in the support mechanisms, what they saw in how we were trying to establish a performance standard. And that was and once they saw that, it was a pretty easy decision. And each and every one of them that has come into us has been an absolute joy to have around, but also have been great contributors to all of our group, you know, and, you know, that bodes well. As it relates to the next group, I'm sure there's always going to be, just because of the type of country we are, the type of society we are, there
mm-hmm.
are going to be players who have departed our shores and have taken up shop somewhere else. And that's up to our, you know, deep rooted activities within our Excel program and our pathway and all the people that participate within the National Youth Teams program in identifying those people as early as possible and getting to those people and saying, hey, you haven't made a decision yet? Well, guess what? We want to present you with this option.
Right.
And please take it, because you know there's rules and regulations about when we can cap people and all those types of things.
Yeah,
so why don't we start that relationship early? And what's happening, as again, from Canada Soccer's point of view as a collective, it's a lot of touch points. Are there ones that are immediately on the horizon? Yeah, there's a couple, I think. But to be fair, we'll keep those close to our chest because
mm-hmm.
we don't want to tip people off in that regards. But
right.
in general, the first phase, I think we certainly have exhausted that process at this point, unless there's somebody we haven't seen yet, which we'll just continue to do that, you know.
Right,
but I
right.
think it's been I can't say enough about the testament to the work that was being done behind the scenes and the work that was being done as a team, as a group, you know, relationships between ourselves, the youth team, head office, the office of the general secretary, the office of the president, you know. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I think is the important part.
Yeah, I mean, and I would agree with you on that. It seemed like the needle completely went the other way. Right.
Yeah.
Nobody was really choosing or nobody was really that enthusiastic about if they had options. And then all of a sudden they just started to roll in and you got a lot of people that were consistent starters or played consistent minutes. And you know, I mean, this speaks maybe a bit to the idea that 2018 was going to be a bit of a wasteland and it was more the next generation for 2022. And I want to get into the age disparity in a second, so I'll leave that for a bit. But 2018 wasn't that much of a wasteland, as it turned out. We actually had a legitimate shot of making the hex.
Absolutely. And I think, to be fair to the previous generation, you know, as we were eliminated in the previous round, we were very close to going to the hex too then. It just happened to end on a very, very unfortunate note that then basically decorated the Canadian national team for the next number of years in a very poor manner. So that was unfortunate. Yeah, we were close, but we also have to be, again, we have to be realistic. We didn't qualify. So in this review that we and the program and its staff are undertaking right now, we have to make some very critical assessments of things that we think we can do better. And that's natural. And, you know, we'll build from that.
Well, I mean, that's a natural segue. What are some of those things?
What do I think? Well, I think first and foremost, you know, I am completely convinced that the organization of Canada Soccer did everything humanly possible to present and produce an atmosphere for the players to perform. I think the actual support mechanisms and the advancements that we made in relationship to connecting some of our off-field sports science and medical support was very, very, very important in regards to that. I think that the area of preparation, you could not, at the end of the day, fault much of that preparation. You have to look at the fact that, you know, we still need to get to that next level, to have a deeper, more quality pool of players to guarantee success. Because I think we have some very, very good players. And so what we need to do is we need to do the best job possible with this next generation of providing them with the same standard all the way through. We need to continue to give them international experience in regards to knowing exactly what they're up against. You know, what sort of competency do we acquire as a team in our units and individually, positionally? And our hope is that those players are going to gain valuable critical minutes within their club, because that is also going to be a absolutely key element to this. You know, we need our players playing, all right? And because we only can deal with the quality that comes to us, and we need our players playing. And so whatever we can do to help them do that, we will. And the hard work that's going on below us and inside our academy systems, all that, hopefully that will assist us in bearing that type of fruit, as I mentioned.
Right. Can we kind of talk a little bit about the tactical side of things for a second? I mean, I know you referenced the learning curve that the team was on, their ideas about defensive responsibilities and how that was a stronger part under Floro, perhaps. Is that a fair way to put it?
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, it was certainly identified as a priority early, is that we needed to establish a foundation to work from. And, you can say whatever you want, and football is about debate, but most successful, if not all successful, teams' offensive output and success comes from a good, solid sense of philosophy and base.
Right.
So that's true.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, yeah, that's true. Go ahead.
That's all right. We got a bit of a delay here, so I'm ending up talking over you. I thought the quote from the media call was hilarious. I wasn't on it, of course, but I picked it up from a couple of people's Twitter feeds that we're not going to dispense with that. We're going to play one at the back, and we're going to throw everybody forward, and we're just going to pin our ears back and go for it, which is brilliant. Of course,
well,
that's not what.
Yeah, I think what I'm alluding to is the fact that, look, there is no doubt we'd be lying to a nation if we didn't say we didn't score enough goals. I mean, that's what football is about. That's the ultimate goal. That's the ultimate objective. And we didn't score enough. I mean, that's no secret, you know. And we constantly we're building on trying to make that happen. And I think the work that we've done previously, as a collective, as a group, as the Excel program pathway from the lower end is pushing against the upper end, we certainly want to now transition, because we have this evolution that's going to happen. We want to be able to then now use that foundation that's been built, and the understanding and the principles, because that's what they are. They're principles. You know, they're not one person's necessarily opinion. When you're talking about principles of play, they don't change right. very much. So we need to build on that foundation to now move our team forward as it relates to what our attacking beliefs are, what our attacking philosophy is, what our attacking qualities are, and try and enhance those and make sure that it's forefront in our players' mindset, but it's also building from that foundation that we've already established.
The defensive foundation is what you're referring to.
Exactly. That, you know, if we're able to produce a way we play, a solid base to work from, you're going to benefit from that, you know. And as you well know, and we've talked before, international football is quite different than club football, because you have limited touch points with the player.
Right.
So you don't have as many opportunities to rebound and reassess and retrain over a period of time. You have to get it right. So, you know, that's why this transition is going to be important. You know, this period of time, we need to work from what we've done and build on it to move forward. And I think that is a common element in most nations that are constantly in a development phase as it relates to international success.
Right. You know, this is maybe a little bit more of a specific question along those lines. And sometimes you see one example and it's definitely not enough evidence to build a generalization around. But I think that there's, you know, this goes on in whatever supporter circles and people that pay attention to this stuff maybe a little bit more closely. When it was announced that you were going to be interim head coach, a lot of people were having flashbacks to the friendly against Ghana, where it seemed a little bit like there was maybe a little bit more of that attacking intent on display there. Do you think that was maybe because you were at the helm during that Ghana game, because Benito and was off with the under-23s? That's right, isn't it?
Yeah, I was originally with him for the preparation and first part of the U-23s, and then Benito then applied me to the senior team while he continued to work with that group. So he was also in the Ghana camp while we were there. He just was not there for the match. So,
right.
You know, to come out and say, yeah, oh, yeah, guess what? You know, Michael Finley was, you know, it was his idea or what he's doing. I think that's a little far-fetched. What I do know is that what you remember about that Ghana game was the number of players that were given their debuts.
Yes, that's true, too.
And in doing so, you have to remember what type of a player we were looking at and trying to start to transition into this program. And that, again, I do refer back to what has been happening in the past and behind the scenes. So when that player arrived and the plan was in place, a collective plan in place from a staffing point of view, and obviously Benito at the lead at that point was, you know, we need to give this is a good opportunity to give these guys a chance to get into the international arena. And so, the one thing that we did do is we implored them to play with no fear, and to say, look, this is a time to get you in and get a feel, and let's address this game as not as a threat, but as an opportunity. And I think those players really did take that in from the staff, as I say, and I include Benito in that description. And I think they applied it. And I think what we're seeing here is we're seeing this balance point. Right? Where are we? Where do we want to be? And how do we get there? You know, and this is part of that process. That's why the next coming months will be essential to us from a evaluation, assessment, review process, and opportunity. And so, you know, we once again, we've had a plan that was sort of sitting on the side of the table, and now we'll start moving that plan as a collective group into motion, because, of course, that's the next phase.
Right. And you've mentioned, you've said the word transition several times, so I'm assuming this is the plan. The plan is the transition. And there is, just let me go back for a second as well, there is a fairly large age gap. You've got some kind of 29-year-olds and older, and then you've got, you know, 22 and 23-year-olds and younger, and there's not much in between. Is that part of the transition plan as well, that you realize that these veterans aren't going to be around maybe for that much longer? And now, I mean, the base, the 22, 21-year-old base is actually maybe a little wider and maybe a little deeper than the one that's kind of maybe exiting at the wrong end of 30s.
Yeah. Well, if you look at we've done as a collective group, we've sat down and we have as staff looked at, you know, basically evaluating and assessing our player pool, and we know what's going on U20 down, right? Because of course you've got Tony's group in charge, and Rob leading the 20s, and Paul leading the 17s. And are able to gather all the critical information and data on those players, and we know who they are. We needed to do the same thing at the senior level, so we began that. And what we did in our analysis is we realized that the critical age that we need for World Cup qualifying is that 24 to 28 group. You know, that we needed to load that group moving forward, and we were basically in this process. In the last rotation, we are sort of got bookends on them, and we were trying to prop them up. Now, a vast majority of our player pool is under the age of 23, and as of next year, a lot of them will now move and be 24. So that middle pack will become much larger, and it will give us an opportunity to give more time, more opportunity, gives us as a group more opportunity to assess and evaluate. And in the same token, a key element in my mind and in our staff's mind is we want to benefit from the investment we've made in players who are sort of, you know, that 28, 29 plus group. Because, you know, it's like any investment you make, you want to see a profit. And so in doing so, what we need to profit from these players is their experience, their attitude, and their commitment to the nation and to the team, and also the standard that has to be brought within inside the training environment and the match play environment. So those players will be of assistance to our younger players. And they know that naturally they're slowly going to progress out of the window of selection. But that still doesn't mean that they can't compete. And what that does is then it raises their commitment level and competition level, but it also drags that younger place. So we're going to balance those guys out over time. And they're all very smart professionals, obviously. And they know there's going to be a time where someone's going to tap them on the shoulder and say, you know, your international career is over.
Right.
But we have to have a plan, which we do, that we will do that strategically. And some will leave the arena sooner than others. Others will be used to benefit our youth. And I think that's something we really need to focus on. It's something that is part of our XL pathway, planning, just like coach development. I've got Paul Stalteri coming to the camp in Morocco, for example. So that's part of an established plan. Internally about coach development at the international level. So, you know, so there's all those elements involved. But no doubt, organically, this team will get younger. It's inevitable. We have to make sure that we treat them appropriately and responsibly as we educate them on the international requirements.
Yeah, I mean, just from a demographic standpoint, you can't see it getting much older. Like, I mean, a few of those guys, it'll only take three or four of the senior veterans to be done, and, you know, suddenly average age will be 23.
Well, exactly. And that's why I think we have to be responsible with that. You know, I think we firmly believe, as I say, involvement. That doesn't mean you know you're coming into a camp and let it be known. Our discussion and our communication with these players is paramount, and we talk to them about this stuff, and we want them to be aware, and we give them the opportunity to provide input on their own career and what their own career path looks like. And so we want to make sure they understand why and what is our strategy and if they're willing to participate in that portion of it. Right. That's up to them.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, I'm assuming that what we've also seen as a bit of a transition maybe from years ago to this last cycle is a lot more games. So I'm assuming that this is part of your plan as well. As many FIFA windows as there can be friendlies arranged for, they're going to keep hitting those, and then all of a sudden we'll have the Gold Cup, which will be a much more intensive way of assessing and playing some of these players.
Absolutely. And again, you have to give credit to Peter and the board and obviously Victor as the president, but making a statement here saying we are supporting our programs on both sides of the gender line, and we want to make sure that people understand that, you know, we didn't qualify. Okay, well, listen, we're going to send you a note in 2020, then we start qualifying again.
Right,
you know,
right.
that is exactly what we don't want to do, and I think they've proven it by commitment they've made and the support they've made of the programs and saying we're going forward, and it is our goal to play in every FIFA date. We will obviously receive direction and recommendations from the technical staff and program about how they see that and what their objectives are and what they want to gain from that. But we can't be anything but over the moon, the fact that we're going to be able to play these games because again, it is no secret, you know, giving these players international experience with the strategy, which is key. And I said it on the media call today look, we can't have any friendlies. We can't treat them like friendlies. And I think someone mentioned someone sent me a note on Twitter saying, "Oh, well, that's the same as Benito Florida saying there are no, you know, actually." Well, that's the same as anybody saying that, because what we want to do is create an atmosphere inside the group and saying, "Look, guys, if you're a younger player, this is your time to produce a performance and a standard that we then have a question. Do we pick him? Is he the right person? The middle ground needs to know that every time they come in, you know, you need to solidify that spot.
Uh-huh.
And the older guy at the end of the day is saying, well, these guys are going to actually take my spot. Or more importantly, am I able to push them that I retain my spot for the next little while? So internally, that's what we mean about not wanting to play friendlies, that everybody will be given a set of objectives. They'll be given a set of standards that we expect, and that it'll be up to them to deliver on that, because at the end of the day, there's going to be consequences, and the consequences are always about selection or non-selection. So that's generally what I was saying about no friendlies. You know, I wasn't using it as just some loose description. You know, we want to play meaningful games, what I mean by that is against meaningful opponents that fit our region, that give us the opportunity to have experiential travel, to see teams playing within their own country as many times as we can, and get those players an opportunity.
See, now this raises a bit of a question in my mind, is that we've seen some really excellent home support over the last set of qualifiers too. Is that something that we might be able to hope for in the next 8 to 10 months before the World Cup hits, maybe a home friendly?
Well, I think we all love to play at home. I mean, I can't say enough the work that was done about getting our home games to the level they were at in terms of attendance. And, you know, we have to applaud our fan base. I mean, they turned out big time, and the players and the staff noticed it immediately. I mean, it was a real enthusiastic Canadian bread bleed type of support, and there was, you could really feel it. And obviously as a group, we'll want to play at home. Obviously that's more of a picture that lends itself to you know, head office and marketing and ticketing, and you know, I'm sure that you know, we'll sit down, or they'll sit down with us because it's certainly been part of the program and part of the idea. I'm just not in a position to comment on that because it's not really in my wheelhouse.
Yeah, yeah, there you go. Well, okay, I've got two last things and then I should let you go. The one is a bit of an aside, and then we'll come back to the main topic. Of course, there's constantly, and I feel compelled to ask you this, even though I'm sure that you wouldn't be able to share any of the technical details, even if you knew them, and I'm not even sure that you would. But for supporters like me, the rumors that have trickled out and the odd maybe thing that has been said to confirm some of the rumors, maybe a little bit about Canadian Premier League, have left us just, you know, dying for more information. But not so much on that question, but how do you see a potential league influencing the ability to choose players and get them playing time going forward? A domestic league, that is.
Yeah, well, you know, to be frank, it's critical. It's critical. And I think we all know that, that, you know, as a country, a domestic league for us would provide us with an enormous uplift in being able to have our players playing on a consistent basis, and specifically domestically, you know, which at the end of the day, you know, in unison builds culture. And so
once
we build culture around that, it will enhance all aspects around the investment, the support, all of those things. And then what at the end benefits the most? The players. And that should be our focus. So, you know, absolutely a critical element, I believe. And I know that Canada Soccer and our leadership firmly believes in that. You know, again, you're right. I can't comment. That's not my world in terms of the structure or the timing or anything like that.
Right.
What I will say is it's absolutely critical and should be a priority for us, which I know it is. And I think it's also something that we have to discuss as a bigger picture. You know, it's a partnership. This isn't something that should be done in a silo. It has to be done in a uniform manner with a strong long-term strategic plan to it, because you know, at the end of the day, it's a problem that we don't have our own domestic league, full stop.
Right, there you go. Okay, final question. I'm not quite sure how to phrase it. I've been trying to think of exactly how to phrase it, but I mean,
now you got me nervous.
Well, hopefully it's not too bad. It's yeah, okay. I don't know, we'll see. No, it just sounds like such a monumental task, right? So you're basically overseeing, even if, you know, you go through the interim bit and come whatever February or March next year, the CSA has done their search for head coach and they've decided that you're not it, it's somebody else. You're still kind of shepherding this program forward through a critical phase, right? You're trying to bring in all these things.
Yeah.
Do you feel like you're up for that task, and does it seem kind of overwhelming sometimes? I guess you wouldn't have accepted the job if you didn't feel you're up for the task.
No, but no.
I'll let the question stand.
Yeah, no, and it's fine. I mean, for me, you know, I got asked, I think on a media call about, you know, I think Neil Davidson said something, you know, do you consider yourself a candidate for this job? You know, the short answer to that is, of course I do, because I think every professional coach who's Canadian would want to coach the Canadian men's national team.
Mm-hmm.
I have to tell you, being provided the interim position is a dream come true for me. Something that I've spoke about and wished for many years. And I can't tell you how honored I am to have been given this opportunity, whether it is a short term, medium term, or long term. I can't even tell you, you know, how I feel about that. In terms of the job in the interim position, this is, again, I go back to, it's very important, I think, for our fans and for the football public to know that behind the scenes there has been a plan to make sure that we hit certain benchmarks, and this is part of that plan. So, you know, I understand my mandate right now. And that involves a significant amount of evaluation, assessment, and review. I will do that and produce that as part of this job. I don't think it's let's put it this way. I'm not scared of the task. I'm actually excited about the task because I feel that I've prepared for a very, very long time to be part of the, you know, the pointy end of the pyramid, and I want to do my best to make sure whether I'm the guy or whoever comes in next has the best possible chance with the best possible data, with the best possible squad, so we can progress. And I wholeheartedly feel that. And if along the way it turns out that the hierarchy of Canadian soccer feels I'm the guy, well, then even better. But right now I know what my role is. I know what my mandate is from Peter and from the board and from Vic, and I'll deliver on that.
Well, there you go. That couldn't have been much better summed up, I don't think.
Okay.
That's a great way to end it. As always, very much appreciate your time. Jeff and Lars and I, although Lars hasn't been involved with the podcast as much, but certainly myself and Jeff, always appreciate getting people in your position on and you giving up your time to spend it with little old us. So that's fantastic. Thank you very much.
No, As I said, it's a pleasure. This is something that I enjoy because I think A, we're talking football. B, I think we're reaching a very, very important part of our culture, our fan base, and I always appreciate the work you guys do. And I know you do good quality work. And as I say, I'm available anytime for you. And I know Richard has always said that he'll do his best to get a hold of you when you need me. I'm worried though, because usually when I'm on these shows, they give me something like a pen or something as a parting gift. What do I get from Regina?
What do you get from Regina? Oh, no.
Yeah, what do I get from Regina? Do I get a T-shirt or something? What do I get?
Well, here's an idea. Here's an idea that a friend of mine from Hamilton kind of suggested, or at least he was in on the suggestion, and we had a laugh. Yeah. So if we ever get around to doing this, we'll make sure that you are on the mailing list. To get one of these, but he said, well, how come you guys aren't making From the Black Hole scarves? Right. And, and I was like, okay, well, we should make scarves. We could, you know, design blah, blah, blah. But one of the phrases that would go on the scarf, because this is a phrase that I guess I didn't even realize it, that it was a Pierre Trudeau phrase, this is an exact translation necessarily, but it's pretty darn close. And that is, and I use it kind of semi-regularly. I used to use it when I was a high school teacher to some of my students and they'd have a bit of a laugh. But it was, I've been called worse by better. So if we have a from the black hole scarf on one side, it would likely say I've been called worse by better. So maybe if we produce that, we'll have to send one your way. Otherwise, yeah, I think the best I can do is offer you a beverage if we ever get a chance to sit down face to face.
Oh, well, we're always appreciative there, but you know, but the scarf idea I like, because that saying that fits, you know, I guess when you get into the position I'm in on an interim basis right now, you know, you're either a hit or a miss. So
right.
the scarf might fit my world.
And that brings us to the end of episode 86. Thanks for listening, and of course, thanks to Michael for joining us today. We'll be back soon with another podcast, so until then, take care.